The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today, while we have the author of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, this, the full-color second edition, this is a traveler's life list. Places that, before you die, you might want to check out. This book by Patricia Schultz. Patricia, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, 1,000 places to see before you die. What do you say here? I mean, second edition. I know that you have color photos in this book. So is it the same as the last book with the exception of the color photos?
Well, the first book came out in 2003, so a whole lot of time has transpired. In fact, this is our 10th anniversary. And I felt that the world had changed so much. I think that I had changed a lot, how I traveled, how I saw the world and all of its myriad possibilities. And quite simply, I had experienced and seen and visited so many places since then. And the nature of any travel book is that no sooner is the ink dry is it suddenly out of date. So I was lucky enough. The publisher said, here, do with it as you will. He would have been happy, I think, if I just changed a few dates and updated websites. But no, I had to rewrite the entire book. So it took 5 years, but I'm very happy with the book. I consider it an entirely new book.
I would guess in that time span, countries change, borders change. Is that some of the reason why 1,000 Places to See Before You Die is almost a completely new book?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's room for many, many, many sequels to come in the future because that's the nature of the world. So when I was researching the first book, it came out in 2003. It took me 8 years. So in the late 90s, the whole area of the world of Eastern Europe, the wall was down. They were open for business, but they were perceived as maybe a little bit unwelcoming. There was no infrastructure. Really, were people going to Romania or Czechoslovakia? Now the Czech Republic and Slovakia. So that whole chapter of the book in the revision was very much expanded and rewritten and rethought and redone. And also Yugoslavia. There was in the 90s that whole raft of wars. Now Yugoslavia is the sovereign states of Slovenia, Croatia, Montenegro, etc. So that area of the world wasn't even represented in the first book, and etc., etc., etc. Cuba now is just opening its doors to tourism for Americans. So all of that is reflected in this new book. But as I said, as the years go by, will another sequel be on the boards? I don't know, but it does reflect how the world is ever changing, and what is possible and available to us is always changing.
Patricia, you know, I thought that maybe you'd been to all these places and it wasn't time for you to die yet, so you had to find some more.
But, you know, the more you travel, and even me, people think I live on an airplane, which is times is pretty true. But the more you travel, the more you stumble upon things you've never been to, and even in my case, things I've never heard about. And yet once you Google and find out and talk and kind of explore, you realize that you're not the first one there, but it somehow was not on your radar. And that's the beauty of travel. You know, people who say, been there, done that, I'm staying home for the rest of my life, I've seen the world. What? Are you kidding me? But I guess that's not my kind of traveler. I think most of us have this inherent sense of curiosity, and you always want to get off the couch and out the front door. And it doesn't need to be really exotic on the other side of the world. It doesn't need to be expensive. It can be just, you know, within a gas tank away. Look what we have in the USA. Oh, that rhymed.
Yeah, it did. And you know what I was thinking on the way in here for this interview today, that you've got a 1,000 places to see before you die all across the world in the United States. Do you ever see maybe a book of 1,000 places to see on a day trip or something like that? Because there is a lot of things to see in the United States.
Well, when this book took off so incredibly and unanticipatedly well, I got that much awaited phone call that every writer likes to hear from their publisher, which is, why don't you come in and we'll talk about your next project? And so it was kind of no-brainer that we did 1,000 places in the USA and Canada, because it's, I think, the only continent that really offers as much in the diversity. And you take into consideration that only 30% of Americans have passports. All of that conspires to what was the second book in this line, and that was the USA and Canada, 1,000 Places to See in the USA and Canada. So the very abbreviated chapter I had on the USA and Canada in the World book became my foundation for what would then become a brand new book. And it's divided into regions, so you can very easily see what's within, you know, 1, 2, 5, 7 hours of your hometown. What's a great even day trip away, or what is a great weekend if you want to travel by car, or get in a plane and visit, you know, the West Coast or Canada. I love the maritime counties and the East Coast, and then on the West Coast, Alberta, British Columbia, Vancouver, are very under visited neighbor to the north that doesn't get a lot of American tourism, Canada, and I don't really understand why.
Patricia, when you were doing 1,000 Places to See Before You Die worldwide, of course you would need a plane or you'd need a boat to get to some places.
My private jet, you mean?
Yes, your private jet. with the one in the United States and Canada, was that mainly driving across the country instead of flying?
Oh, yeah, that wonderful road trip, you know, zigzagging back and forth, which I actually did for the first time when I was 18 many, many years ago. But it really opens up your head to this sense of size, you know, really until you drive from coast to coast, only then do you understand the diversity. And then there are myriad road trips. There's the one that goes across the north, the one that goes across the south, the one that goes straight through across. And there's also a wonderful quote by, I don't remember who, that says that most Americans drive across country as if someone was chasing them. And the beauty, I think, is this idea of slow travel, stopping along the way. My friend that I did one of the road trips said that we'll stop wherever it says homemade pie. It's true. These small towns are really the quintessence of everything that is wonderful about small town America. But the big cities, the national parks, we have so very, very much. People come from the other side of the world to see what often is in our backyard.
1,000 Places to See Before You Die, the Traveler's Life List, the full color second edition book by Patricia Schultz. Now, Patricia, when I picked this up, it is a thick book.
2.2 pounds. Yes, an even kilo. I don't know how that came to be right down to the page. It wasn't purposeful.
Well, how is this book laid out? I mean, if I want to start seeing 1,000 places before I die, how is this thing laid out?
Well, it begins in the UK and Ireland, so it starts in continental and the UK area of the world, and then kind of circumnavigates the globe, and it's divided into regions. So if it is Europe, if it's Africa or Asia or Southeast Asia, you can look at it in terms of regions. Or in the back of the book, if you've heard about Iguazu Falls in Argentina, Brazil, or if somebody's come back from Bora Bora and has told you you've got to see it before you die, you can go specifically to the site and then see where it is. Maybe you don't know Bora Bora is in Tahiti, and why is Tahiti called French Polynesia, and where is it anyway? So it's very user-friendly, I think, considering that it's a 1,200-page book and the world is big, and how do you make sense of it? But also on our website, which is 1000places.com, there are additional indices, which is, let's just say you're about golf and you want to, you know, your wife wants to bring you on your 50th and you've been talking about golf since you were 6 years old. So there are indexes just for the best golf courses around the world, or you're an island person, or you're all about museums, or you're a foodie, or you're et cetera, et cetera. Then there are those thematic and specific indexes as well. So any which way you cut it, I think the book will, you know, leave you hard pressed for a couple thousand or a couple hundred places to see. And also, ideally, let's just say you're itching, you know, you've got cabin fever and you just want to get off the couch and explore. Remember when you were a kid and you'd go up into the attic and there was a globe and you'd spin it and you'd stop and it's like, oh, cool, Madagascar. So you can do that as well, I think, just blindly opening the book and getting your inspiration that way.
I don't like to play golf. Never have, but I like to play in the golf. So with 1,000 places to see before you die, I'm sure there's plenty of places around a golf for me to play.
Our golf, the Persian Gulf, you name it, golfs around the world in coastlines. And, you know, I think that often we're so stressed. We have so little time. People, you know, it's always time and money. And it's often just about getting to an idyllic place where you can chill and recharge and relax. And there's a beautiful palm tree and an incredible beach. And I understand that that's often a very intoxicating destination. But then there are so many other types of travel as well. I think, however, you need to follow what kind of, you know, revs your motor, because as I said, we're so pressed for time in America. There's just never, ever enough time. And our lists of reason not to travel are invariably very long. But I say, you know, make it happen, bring the kids, 3 generations, bring the grandparents. It's quality time. It's memories of a lifetime. And there's a great quote that says the only thing you can buy in life that makes you richer is travel.
1,000 places to see before you die. Now, what do you do in this book to whet my appetite for a place?
Well, hopefully putting it in front of you is the
first thing. With a color picture.
And a title that makes you want to further explore, you know, what is this book about? And I'm glad to say that nobody has ever asked me, what is the book about? It kind of is self-explanatory. So in just record space, because with so many places, I try to keep it short and sweet, giving a little bit of an idea of why you need to go there sooner rather than later. And that's another thing, sooner rather than later. It's not just about us. It's not just about our knees or our fragility or the very fact that there is no guarantee that you're here today, but who knows about tomorrow. But also these places. I mean, imagine their fragility and imagine, you know, one tsunami, one earthquake, one civil war, one, you know, crazy dictator who comes in and says, okay, no tourism. Everything about life in the world is very unpredictable, and I'm the queen of carpe diem. I really encourage people to just make it happen. We get very relaxed. You know, we didn't make it this year. Let's go next year. And suddenly you wake up and you're 95 and, oh, well. And my 95-year-old aunt in upstate New York says the only thing you want to see when you're 95 is the view from your front porch. She doesn't even go out on the front porch many, many days these in this period. So really, carpe diem, and now would be a good time.
I'm 95. I just hope I can open my eyes.
I know, let alone the front door, right?
Let's talk about the thousands of books. I don't know another way to put it. You have other books out there. Your company, the publisher's company, 1,000 What to Do.
It was funny because when the first book came out in 2003, it was like an immediate success. And there were people saying, well, you don't put die in the title, but we did. And it did phenomenally well because I think people like this idea of lists. I think they like the idea that somebody else has done a whole lot of homework for them and neatly ties it up between 2 covers. So as I mentioned, we did the world book first, and then we did the second book, which was the USA and Canada, but then we went beyond the concept of travel. And what do people love? They love to read. They love to listen to music. They love to eat. So we have a trademark on what is considered 1,000 Before You Die. The first book we did was 1,000 Recordings, and that came out a few years ago and was as successful as we hoped for, because who doesn't love music? And if you love music a lot, if you're just kind of getting into the music world and you're in an, oh my God, there's so much to listen to, where do I begin? This is a great gift. It's a great education. It opens you up to the possibilities since forever. So that's an incredible mix of everything from the Beatles to Beethoven and back again. And then what we're working on now is, because if I had a dime for every time somebody said this to me, you should do a book about food. And it's yes, because we are. And it should be coming out next year. And it's 1,000 foods to eat before you die. So what a great idea that is around the world. We're doing 1,000 books to read, because the bibliophiles of the world are, I think, on the edge of their seats. And the list goes on.
A book on books.
Yes, the ultimate, hopefully.
1,000 Places to See Before You Die, of course, the brand new book by Patricia Schultz. You said that you had a website for this also. Does that go with the book, and does that change more than the books have?
The website will give you an idea about the book, the various books I just mentioned, some of the auxiliary things such as a travel journal that we do, and also different trips that I host around the world. I just came back from Ethiopia and took a small group, and they were as blown away as I knew they would be, because it's one of the great kept secrets of Africa, I think. And a lot of the cruises where I'm guest speaker, I'll be talking on as a guest speaker on a ship that's in the Eastern Mediterranean, so for Greece and Turkey, that kind of thing. And other events. Additionally, maybe what you're referring to is our app. We have a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful app that's very interactive. We've got hundreds of thousands of people who have weighed in and posted their photos and given their own lists. And you can create a list of places you've been to, your bucket list of where you'd like to go to. You can kind of rate these places. Oh, I've been to Prague and it's my favorite place in Europe, that kind of thing. Beautiful, thousands of photographs. That maybe is what is more interesting to the 1,000 Places listener.
Tricia, you know, 1,000 places, 1,000 pieces of music, 1,000 foods, 1,000 books. Pretty subjective, I guess. So when you compile everything in a big, huge pile, which I'm sure that you'd have to do, how do you whittle that down to just what you want to put in the books?
That's the million-dollar question. But my publisher, way back when, as I indirectly mentioned, I began in 95 for the book that came out, the first book that came out in 2003. He was very clear, and he said, this is your book. It's not meant to be Fodor's or Fromer's or, you know, books that are put together by teams. So you have 5 people or 20 people who are weighing in on a particular destination. He said, he gave me carte blanche. He said, it's a great, wonderful, unpredicted mix of all of those places that have wowed you. And he said, and it can be a crazy mix. You know, we can put super dog hot dogs from Chicago up there against the Louvre in Paris. And that's the beauty of the book. But I realized that that's the beauty of the world. And that's the beauty of travel, because travel is very many different things to different people. If you're only about food, or if you're only about South America, if you've, you know, have these blinders on and the only thing that will get you out the front door is, you know, shopping, then, well, whatever. At least it gets you into a different area that's beyond the village gates. But ideally, you want to see a little bit of everything, and that's how people travel. You know, do you go to Chicago just for hot dogs? No, but in that same chapter, you'll have the Fine Arts Institute of Chicago. You'll have the great jazz festival or the blues festival. Chicago's a great music city. So while you're there for hot dogs, you can also discover everything else that Chicago has to offer. But the great thing that kept me excited and that kept me going for 8 years was that I was able to include whatever just blew me off my chair. And I think the diversity and the this unusual mix of places is what has kept the book very relevant and very popular with so many different people, whether you're very well-traveled or whether you're just starting.
Now, I've been to places in your second book with the United States and Canada, places like the Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota. I've been to the Black Hills of South Dakota, Carhenge in western Nebraska, Rocky Mountain National Park, the Arch in St. Louis. I'm getting ready to go to Minneapolis. Now, besides maybe the statue of Mary Tyler Moore, what is one of the best things maybe to see, maybe on my way to Minneapolis, maybe headed out west? What's maybe a must-see that I just must see if I haven't seen it?
Well, America is such a big country. As an East Coaster, it's interesting to me. I'm from New York City. There's that wonderful poster of the East Coast and the West Coast, and then just desert in between. So all of the possibilities, the embarrassment of choices, as the expression goes, in the Midwest was a real eye-opener to me. So it is only a place that I discovered in the last couple of years. And when I went on book tours, all of these secondary cities like Minneapolis, which is so beautiful, Austin, Texas, another one, I call them kind of the second tier cities because they're not New York, Chicago, LA, Dallas, but everything in between. And there's a proliferation of these places. Minneapolis has a very big cultural scene going. And from what I've heard, I haven't really experienced it personally, also a nascent food scene happening as well. They've got the wintertime winter carnival. I was there just a few months ago, and I think it was in the middle of, you know, it was January, February, and things were looking a little spring-like to the dismay of the people. So I think wherever it is you go, just kind of stay more than the usual 5 minutes, talk to the local people, what's happening, special exhibits, where would they eat, what's new, what's novel, what's happening, what's, you know, putting their city on the map. And America is, I think, one of the most special destinations. You'll be in a small museum like the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe, and you'll turn and there's a family from Tokyo. And it really reminds you that we have so much, and people will spend a lot of effort and money to come and see what we very, very much take for granted. And those 30% of people in America with passports, I should say the 70% of people in America without passports, it doesn't mean that we're exploring our country. It very often means that they're painting the deck the next time they have 2 weeks of vacation. And that's what I don't encourage. And I don't think I'll ever understand that, because look what we have.
You know, maybe I'll take in one of the 10,000 lakes in Minnesota. What do you
think? Yeah, that's remarkable. And also that area that's up against the Canadian border, the boundary canoe waters area of America. It's more water than it is land. You can kind of be dropped in by small plane, and they'll pick you up a week later if they can find you. But they'll set you up with all the provisions and maps if you can read them. And I think you're just off on your own to experience one of the pristine corners of America that really is as if how our Native American people saw it 400 or 500 years ago. It amazes me. And that's true for all of the national parks as well. No other country in the world does with their national parks, if they even have a national park system, what we had the foresight to do with ours.
I think it's kind of fun. You go into Minnesota, and you have the Mississippi River that I think it almost starts up there someplace. And it's thin, say, in St. Paul, Minneapolis. I think it's more Minneapolis. I'm not for sure. But as you go down the United States, by the time it gets to Louisiana, I'm sure it's a pretty thick river.
Yeah, and you know, I just saw in the paper a few weeks ago that they're starting again. I think they were suspended, these river boats that go up a good deal, probably sailing out of New Orleans. And what a great place to start, because New Orleans is one of our great, great, great American cities, which is totally so not American, and yet that is what makes it very special for us. So the whole, you know, Mark Twain, the lifeblood of America, the one of the longest rivers in the world, it's really fascinating. Talk about kind of sailing through America's backyard. A lot of it is industrial. Even that can be very interesting for people, because you kind of sail through the various chapters on American development. And also the Columbia River, the Columbia Gorge, was named one of America's first scenic areas because it was recognized by the American government for its history, the whole expedition of Lewis and Clark that finally saw the Pacific. Oh my God, it was the ocean. And how elated were they, I'm sure. Empties out into the Pacific at Astoria in the state of Oregon. Also beautiful coastline there, just to drive the Oregon coastline. If you keep going south, the coastline of California. So again, so very, very, very much to see.
Patricia, you have seen a lot. You've seen over 1,000 places before you've died, whether it's worldwide, like in this brand new second edition book, full color book. It's a traveler's life list. What would you say, whether it's out of this book or out of your other books that you've written, what is your most favorite place? And then let's touch on maybe a place that maybe didn't make the cut for a book.
for my next edition, I'm saving all of those that didn't make the cut. So in the U.S., I have so very, very many places. One is my hometown, New York City. You know, we're only half kidding when we call it the center of the universe. But I can go away for a long weekend. I can go away for a month and you come back and it's new and it's exhilarating to me. It's just 25-8, as we say. I can walk around the block and come home with stories to tell because the ethnic mosaic, the cultural scene, 13 months of the year, always something going on. I love the energy. I'm just a big city girl, not born a big city girl, but found that I'm so just energized by taking it all in. And also elsewhere in the USA, a whole different flip side approach to experiencing America is the Four Corners area. It's the only place in America where four states come together, and I know you know what they are. It's Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and
Colorado.
Thank you. Okay. That? A gold star. And so much of that area was the location for all of those great, wonderful Western movies filmed in the 30s and 40s with John Wayne, Broken Arrow, Yellow Ribbon, Fort Apache. And it has remained the same. Thanks again to the National Park System, to the state parks. The Navajo Nation is there. Monument Valley is just a postcard. And you can only visit if in the company of a Navajo guide. So how cool is that? Because you're able to usually load them down with millions of questions about their life today and how is it in their history and their heritage. So that's America. And then elsewhere, I think when people want to know my favorite place, they think I'm going to come through with something like super exotic and crazy, you know, inaccessible like Mount Everest or I don't know. But Italy. Italy for me, I think there's no other city, not just in Europe, but in the world like it. It has more UNESCO sites. It's not that big a country. More UNESCO sites than any other country. Some countries would kill for one World Heritage site. I think Italy has more than 40. And the people and the food and the heritage and the recent history, which is as recently as the Renaissance and the antiquities that go back to before Christ, the diversity, the Alps in the north, and I mean, I could go on. But and I'm of Italian heritage, but you don't have to be, I think, to love Italy.
Well, my favorite place, it's in the book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, full color second edition, A Traveler's Life List, Las Vegas, Nevada. I mean, you can experience the whole world right there in Las Vegas. Patricia, before we go, what's that website one more time?
www.1000placestoseebeforeyoudie.com. Also, 1000places.com, more simply.
All right. 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. This is the full color second edition. Maybe you have the first edition. Well, you need this one. Full color, new places to see. It's a brand new book, basically, with Patricia Schultz. Patricia, thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you very much. I love Las Vegas.
1,000 Places to See Before You Die with Patricia Schultz. I'm Mark DeWitt for Cover to Cover. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.